Acting while black and female could be hazardous to your health. I'm here talking about it with two of my favorite black actresses. Is that offensive? I hope not. Anyway,
it's not.
Okay, good.
You didn't give us time to answer, but it's not.
Great, because the openings are for me, Ash. Okay,
we're going to be talking. She's going to try to take over. Ash is going to have a podcast tomorrow.
You know what? Cut to the music. Cut to the music now, Gina. Okay, hi, Don't At Me listeners. Today we are going to be talking to you about the sisterhood, okay? The Blacktress sisterhood. Yes. I am sitting with two of my absolute favorite people.
You better say that.
Not only to, like, work with, but to just be around.
We're
like,
just friends.
I love
family.
Y'all. First of all, Ashley Blaine Featherston, who plays the lovely Joelle Brooks in Dear White People. I'm looking at my page for the rest of your credits, but I'm going to mess it up. Here's the deal.
Half
you're brilliant.
Was you. Also in your movie, Bad Hair.
It's true. Also in my movie, Bad Hair. We are slowly trickling out these casting announcements for Bad Hair. It's fine, but you're crazy and brilliant. And also, so are you, Courtney, Miss Courtney Sauls, who plays Brooke, which was certainly, I would say, a breakout character last season. And also in Bad Hair. And you and I went to the same high school.
We did.
Courtney, so Houston Coalition.
H-10.
Up in the house.
Yes. Maryland.
Dear White People is my own show, and obviously because it's me, it tends to be a little female-centric. But that's not the case for most of TVs. In fact, you know, one of the things that I hear all the time, you know, on every project, there's like the casual cool white person who's just meeting me for the first time that says something to the effect of, you know, well, since the hardest thing to be in this industry right now is a white person, but there is this feeling of, no, I'm not trying to get venomous now, but
no, it's true though.
But there is this real feeling among white actors that it has suddenly gotten impossible for them.
Dried up.
And that everybody is just looking for the black women. So Ashley and Courtney, you know, my first question is going to be, is that true? Have you just been inundated with roles?
No.
Okay.
Could not wait for Dear White People to come back.
Listen,
was
okay.
Counting the day.
Listen, inundated with roles. No.
Okay.
Hello.
I mean, I see diversity a lot more on a breakdown. Wait, or open ethnicities, which means they want
everybody.
An Asian girl.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, for the casual listener, what is a breakdown?
Okay, so a breakdown is what breakdown services are, where agents, managers, whatever, they are going to get the character descriptions for their actors that they can send them on audition. So, mm-hmm. you know, it'll be... You know.
So like a short synopsis of the project,
yeah.
what it is, film,
when
television,
when it shoots,
and then the character breakdowns, which are like who is who and what role they play
in
the story.
And who all the producers are and blah, blah, blah.
And it's usually like a sentence or less. I mean, for me on the creator side, they're pulling it from like whatever the script is that mm-hmm. we've just turned
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I look at it, you know, after they write it up and then it goes out. But I don't like sit there and labor. You know, I'm not like trying to express myself through the breakdown language. So my question to you is like, how do you read through them to know if there's something good there? A good part is worded the same way as a regular part or an average part. Just the way the character is described sometimes in these
right.
breakdowns. How do you?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that that's so much us. I think that's more so our reps.
Yes.
Because by the time it gets to us, then we already have the appointment. So therefore, for us, it's
so
more
you don't
so,
even see that right now.
For us, it's more so when we get the sides, which right. are, for the listeners, those are lines from the script in which the actor will read in an audition. Then
yes,
that's when we can kind of definition. Determine. That's when we can determine whether or not the role is fitting for us or not.
But okay, so let's get political for just a second, okay?
Right.
Because here's the deal: I'm fascinated to talk about acting. I am.
You love acting.
I love it.
I know.
But here's the thing. Trump is like a wannabe dictator, and I think we just need to talk about it for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I can write something. I can put my opinions about this out there in the ether. So yes. How do you feel in terms of your art and getting to express yourself through it? Like, how does that, is that even something that, you know, is it like that's a different part of your life? Or like, how do you square that? I'm just curious.
I mean, I think unless you were creating our own work, then it does become that we are subject to whatever is being offered, and hopefully we're picking projects, or projects are picking us, mm-hmm. or we're meeting in the middle, that do have something to say. And so then the characters that we're playing are a part of, you know, expressing an opinion that might not be popular in the White House and around and surroundings. I'm grateful that I have Dear White People because it is saying something and it is offering a voice that is important right now. But other than that, I think it's not necessarily sometimes the work that you're doing, but how you use your platform.
Right.
You know, the more people get to know you. Like, Ashley has a K behind her number. I don't know if you know on Instagram. She has a K behind it.
No.
And a check.
Yeah. Oh, I knew she had the certificate.
So, yeah, she's got... She's
oh, K as in thousands of followers. Oh, yeah, we're in the K Club.
Okay, so like,
Ash and I are both in the K Club.
So literally, so then you have a responsibility, okay?
I use it, all right? Yeah. So you say you ain't got one yet.
Yeah, I can act ratchet as fuck.
After this. No, for me, but I just want to say I will over and over again say how lucky I feel to not only be on Dear White People, but specifically to play Joelle Brooks, because to me, she is everything that Trump, for example, and people that support Trump don't believe in. Mm-hmm. They don't believe in smart, dark, beautiful, kind,
driven,
impassioned, young black women mm-hmm. like Joelle. So I mm-hmm. think to play her is a gift, but it's also like, it's to me a fight back. It's how I kind of fight back. It's how it gives me even more passion and vigor in playing the role, because it's not just a role. It is activism for me.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how you guys got here. Not so much a history, but I want to break down for people who look at you and look at you on a show that gets a lot of attention, mm-hmm. see your face, feel like you're out here, you're famous, you're doing your thing. Mm. I want to break down what's that, but I just want to break down for people who don't really know what an actor's life looks like. Mm. So the first thing I have to ask is when did you fall in love with it? And, you know, here, I'm going to start with a really quick statistic.
Yes.
Only 19% of all female speaking roles on TV are black women.
Wow.
Which is an even smaller number when you consider the fact that women only make up 40% of all speaking characters. Mm. So given that, it's like, you know, looking for a needle in a haystack, mm-hmm. basically these parts where you get to be an actor, pay your bills, but also say something. I mean, these things are really hard to find. It seems to me that you got to really love it. So when did you fall in love with it?
I fell in love with it very young. Like my most prominent memory is I was in, I was 4 years old in Montessori school, and we were doing, make a long story short, we were doing the play, The Three Billy Goats Gruff. I got cast as a Billy Goat, and I was like, nah, the Billy Goats ain't right. Mm-mm. They're mean. They're like yelling at people. Like, I don't like that. Like, mm-mm. So my dad's like, what? You got one of the lead Billy Goats? And I'm like, Dad, it just doesn't feel right. I don't want to do that. So I asked for another part.
How old were you? Were like, Dad, it doesn't feel right.
I was at four. I was four. He'll tell you the same story.
It doesn't feel right.
It didn't resonate with me. And so I kindly asked to be a bunny who was just sweet and hopping around.
It's a fair ask.
It was a fair ask. But my point is that at that age, I knew that I loved this, but I also knew that I only liked doing things that felt good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to compromise that. You know, my parents, to be honest, they always helped cultivate my craft. So mm-hmm. from that age on, I was always in voice lessons, always in dance class, always in acting class. Started, you know, my parents got me a manager when I was 14, started doing professional theater at 15. So, you know, I had parents who really believed in me and allowed me to kind of live that, like, actory life
mm-hmm.
from a very young age. I kept begging them to let me get on Disney's Bug Juice, which I don't know if you guys remember.
I have no idea.
It was a reality show about young kids at summer camp.
And what?
It was like The Hills, but with kids on Disney.
Did you go to summer camp?
I did, but I wanted to be on TV on summer camp.
Well, yeah, that would be the crucial difference.
Yeah, no, so, but I know, but I'm saying I didn't even go to summer camp, let alone like.
I went twice.
I went to Girl Scouts once, and someone tried to drown me, and I never went.
What? Someone tried to drown you?
Well, so I did Boy Scouts, and we did the summer trip or whatever, and I remember like it was like swimming day or something.
Yes.
And you're standing in front of this lake, and I'm like, first of all, I'm like,
we grew up in, do lakes. Yeah, they tried to get me to do the lake too. We don't do lakes.
Well, we grew up in the city also, so like I've never encountered like a lake.
No,
like
the
that.
Bayou is as much water as you get.
Yeah, and I was thrust into that lake.
Me too.
And I never returned to the Boy Scouts.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Same. Some girl tried to drown me, but it's fine. I have lots of trauma around water, but I can swim now.
Oh.
So she tried to murder you?
Well, she was being mean, you know?
First of all, you having lots of trauma around water is something we're going to need to work in season 3. So when did you fall in love, Courtney?
You know, okay, so my uncle and aunt still have all these videos, but when I was young, I used to do Christmas programs for my family. And I would like write raps, original raps, like Christmas raps for my boy cousins.
Can I have one of those for this Christmas? I would love a Christmas rap.
And we would do dancing. It was like a variety show. But like I was one of the younger ones, so like no one would ever do it. So it ended up just me doing everything and making my sister do a couple things. And so that was pretty, I mean, I was very young. And like middle school, I started really getting into acting. So I knew from a young age that this is what I loved. But I don't think I realized until like high school that it was like an option, like for a career, like you could actually like do this for real, like it was like this is something that I love to do, I'm like good at it, obviously. Okay. Everybody's like, she's so great, like telling my mom, like, which one, she's the one whose daughter is yelling the loudest in choir, like why is she so they told my mom to get me tested because they thought that I was deaf because I would speak so loud, and my mom's like, well, at least you can hear her, like I was always like,
oh my god,
oh
very I was always very outspoken and not afraid. But then I went to a performing arts high school, and I was like, I went there too. I know. Oh, remember when you directed that one?
This is so shady. So we have this back and forth, it doesn't matter.
But
Courtney directed the Hispanic Heritage play.
There were no Hispanic people to direct it?
There were none available, apparently, who could direct the
play. They were all in it.
Okay.
So it was up to junior Courtney and sophomore Joe. I was the assistant director.
Okay, but this is what he does for a living, so he should have known better.
There were creative tensions from the start.
I would die to go back in time.
Me too.
I would kill for that.
Oh my god! Can you imagine? Oh my god!
Just so you guys at a meeting.
Honestly,
like, so
you know what I just realized? That was Lyta LaBrooke. Like that's
That totally was.
That has to be where that came from.
Listen here, I 100%. Just died and came back alive.
I just realized that.
That's crazy because that exactly is. Because I was like, "Here's what we're doing, okay?" And Justin's like, "No, I don't think that's right." And I'm like, "This is what we're doing."
I have thoughts.
And I'm like, no.
We're not going to do those thoughts. Well, because also at that high school,
And now we literally do Justin's
thoughts.
And
so
now
sorry.
We literally do Justin's thoughts.
No, but we'll see. It inspired me to take over and become a dictator of my own. No, but I remember in that school, the hierarchy was very real. And I revered Court. Like, the people above you, like, Courtney was like a god to me. And so.
I mean, not anymore?
Well, yeah, you're a goddess. But anyway, the point is, though, so you both loved it. Mm-hmm. You got here. What is it being here? What is it? Because.
Well, that for me is kind of what the transition was, because acting was never difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really have, like, sure, like there were a few parts that I didn't get, you know, whatever, or things that I wanted and was kind of what sad about. But it wasn't until I got here. Really kind of started at Howard when I went to Howard. But really when I got to LA, it was hard because I didn't feel seen. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel understood. I really felt the weight of being one of a million people trying to do the same thing. I was sad that I wasn't making a living doing what I wanted to do and had to work a million jobs. Like it was very, and what I want people to know is that it didn't really change for me,
mm-hmm.
like really change where I can say this is a true life change. My life condition is different until maybe a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Maybe I'll actually say a year ago.
Wow.
I'll say a year ago at 30 is when I really was like, okay, like I can kind of breathe a little bit now. I can live in an apartment that, like, I actually like now. But I've been out here in February for 9 years.
Mm-hmm. And the irony is not lost on me that we are little kids who just want people to see and hear us. Yeah. I mean, that's why I am a director. That's why I you know what yeah. I mean? Like, it's not why, but it's certainly a part of it.
Oh, 1,000%. And I, just like Ashley, I had always been, like, told, you're so good. Mm-hmm. Through high school, I went to NYU, which is one of the, you know, best theater schools. Oh, my God, you're so great. And then I moved out here, and I was like, huh? Mm-hmm. I'm from a theater background mm-hmm. where it's like you can – your oddness is – celebrated because it's like you don't need to be a certain size, you don't need to look a certain
and
way.
You're truly
you
can that transform you can be anything
you, yeah. That's the art of acting, is to transform. Yeah.
And that's also the nature of theater.
It is.
We all come from theater.
You,
all
you pick a person who, in their core, has the ability to give you a version of this character yes. that could be really interesting. And sometimes the character has been around for literally centuries, and mm-hmm. sometimes the character has just been created. But mm-hmm. you're picking somebody for their ability and their potential.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're not picking somebody who comes fully formed because mm-hmm. you have a rehearsal. The way theater is made is sort of built in to discover
yes.
the thing, and film is not that way.
No.
What do you do with that when you come from a place where you know that you're talented, you know that you're special, you're in this because you want to be seen, and then you come here where you never feel seen. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that feeling? How does that come home with you? How does that inform the next audition?
Honestly, I was struggling mentally with my mental health and even my physical health. I was thinking I needed to be a certain way or certain, like, look a certain way, and I was not kind to myself. Mm. And I started, plug for yoga. I mean, I really started delving into the yoga philosophy, and which I teach on the side.
You're fantastic. When did you discover yoga?
My senior year in college, I took it as an elective, and then mm-hmm. I started practicing at studios in New York. And then I moved out here, and I was super depressed. My mom was like, why don't you find yoga again? You were so happy. Because with yoga, I actually did feel myself, like, kind of blossoming because I was learning to really, like, love myself. In a way, it was a therapy. I've also done other types of therapy, but, like, it was a therapy. It was a transformative time for me. And so when I got here and I started really, like, kind of delving in and doing teacher trainings, I realized I can't be anybody but myself. Like, I literally cannot. And people can see it. They can feel it. And once I really just was like, oh, this is who I am, that's when it started opening up for me.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's when I found my reps or they found me. And I started working when I just was like, this is who I am. And I'm just not going to suffer anymore trying to be something that I'm not.
Right.
And I think it has changed the way that I even approach acting, because I would look at a breakdown and say, well, who do they want? Who do they want to see? And instead, I look at a breakdown and say, how can I bring myself to this?
Mm.
Because ultimately, no matter what, you still have to belong in each role.
Yes.
You have to.
Yeah.
Or else it's soulless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, so much of acting is auditioning.
Yes.
And I was putting a lot on my auditions, and I was not very kind to myself about it. This is what happens for most actors, which is really hard. You put so much on the auditions because you want your life condition to change.
Yes.
And you know that if you get this part, then I can pay my rent next month.
Mm-hmm.
I can go visit my family I haven't been able to see in a couple of months. I can pay that light bill I haven't been, whatever it is, it's the hope and it's the possibility of my life condition changing. But I had to let that go. That's been the biggest shift for me. And my friends always laugh at me about it. But, like, I don't want to say that I don't care. But it's what's for me is for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I go into an audition and I forget every single line and I'm there as a mute, if that role is mine, it's going to be mine regardless.
Well, that's the thing about acting, and why I knew I could never do it after high school, even though I loved acting in high school. I absolutely loved it. And there was a moment when I thought, maybe I'm going to go to school for this. Because even though I knew then that I wanted to be a filmmaker, I loved it. I loved being on stage. especially. But auditioning, I mean, the thing is that the job of acting is not acting. The job of acting is auditioning. Just like the job of a direct, like the actual day-to-day job mostly is pitching or preparing or trying to direct, trying to get something off the ground. It's all these other skill sets.
No, because once you get the job, it's not the job.
It's playtime.
It's playtime.
Yeah, it's playtime. I mean, well, it's a job too for me. So, but still, but like, yeah, but it's fun. That's the fun part. But so much of your time is not spent doing the fun part.
No.
So how do you go after something and then be at peace when you don't get it? And then when you don't get it again? And then when you don't get it again? And then when you, I mean, I'm sorry to, you know, I can't help but think of the bald guy in Fame who's like, you know, acting is the hardest school of them all, or whatever. Yeah. But it's true. How do you do that?
You know what? This honestly changed my life, and this worked for me, and I've encouraged some other people to do it, and they said it's worked for them. So I really, really want Oprah to bring back Masterclass, because Masterclass was just life-changing. But I saw Susan Sarandon's Masterclass, which was amazing, and I just live for S squared, as I like to call her.
It's their thing.
It's our thing. It's totally fine.
Cool.
Hey, S squared. But she talked about auditioning and all that. And she said that what she chose to do, because auditioning is hell, to celebrate each audition. So after each audition, she would do something nice for herself. She would either have a glass of champagne and be like, all right, girl, good job, whether you get it or not, you drinking the champagne. Or she would go get her favorite yogurt. Or she would go, you know, get a good lunch that she wanted, whatever it was. And I realized that I was punishing myself rather than rewarding myself. Even just going through an audition is a victory, whether I get it or not. And so I decided to start celebrating myself and celebrating what I felt like losses, and I only celebrated them knowing that they would set me up for whatever my win is supposed to be. But that took a mind shift. That took years for me to get there. I mean, I was probably 27 by the time I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be like freaking out over these auditions so much. That's why I say that it's really important to know the difference between passion and purpose, because acting is not a passion of mine. It's my purpose. So because of that, I'm able to keep going. I know for a fact, if I were just passionate about acting, I wouldn't still be here, because it's not enough.
What you're saying is that it has to go deeper than a desire to do it, or an obsession with it. It has to go deeper.
Yeah.
I mean, I relate to that, because I do feel like stories can change the world. I feel like the world is actually made up of stories, and that is what keeps me going when it gets really dark. And speaking of it getting dark, I want to talk about, you know, everyone says don't look at anyone else, just look at your own lane. I don't know how anyone does that, especially in the age of Instagram, especially when sometimes, you know, especially in our friend group, it's our friends. It's your peers that you're going up for roles for. And literally, like, you know, you'll see somebody who you were slumming it last week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get some huge
slumming
part. Do you know what I mean? Like, get some huge break, and you're still there. It's like, how do you do that? How do you, because I don't know how you just don't look at anybody else. So I'm assuming you probably do.
I mean,
but where does that live in your life? How do you make room for that? Do you make room for
it? I think what Ashley was talking about, purpose, goes hand in hand with, you know, trusting your journey and trusting your path. I mean, that faith.
Which is super easy to do, right?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. I mean, it's a lifelong challenge. But like Ashley was saying, like, what is for you is for you. And that is, it is hard to digest, but it's got to be the truth. I have to believe that. Otherwise, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, I have to believe this is meant for me. I have to believe that what is meant for me is meant for me. And I have to believe that, like, I am not in competition with anybody, because this is my journey.
I think, you know, I've been really, really blessed to have such a great tribe in LA. Like, I also think that's kind of, a lot of people don't have good people around them. Especially in a town that's as vapid as LA. It is imperative that you have people around you who don't make you feel less than.
Yeah.
And so for me, that hasn't been as much of a struggle because my friends have never made me feel that way. You know, I've never felt, damn, Courtney got a gig and I'm still over here on unemployment. Like,
right,
I've,
right, right.
I've li- honestly never felt that. I have those people around me on purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important to kind of check yourself and your own ego. Like, if I just look at, like, if I'm just speaking even about just, like, my closest girlfriends, like, we're on all such different levels of my career. I mean, mm-hmm, just, mm-hmm. I mean, from me to Courtney to Lena to Aisha Hines, like,
sure.
There's so many of us that are, you know, on so many different parts of the map, but we're all supporting one another through it, and mm-hmm. and no one's trying to make anybody else feel inferior or less than or... So, I don't know. I just really encourage people to have a good try, because that's what can drive you insane.
Right. But even then, I mean, I'll say this. I've never coveted somebody else. Like, I've never been upset with somebody for getting mm-hmm. something. But I have certainly...
been like, damn. Yeah, for just, sure.
had a moment over, oh, I wish I was there.
Yeah. Right, no, right. Oh, that I'm not saying that I haven't felt that. But yeah. What I'm saying is that it helps not feeling that in my immediate circle.
But you know, so many people, so many people get ahead because they have bad behavior.
Yes.
And there's so many, I mean, there's, I actually kind bad of make behavior. A bit of a rule to not work with people who I see trouble a coming. Like, it's yeah. just, it's sort of like a, I don't, it doesn't kind of matter who the name is. Like, if I feel like this is not going to be fun,
yeah.
I'm not as excited about it. So, my question for you is when you see these people, and I think because there's a lot of actors who take that feeling of, oh, I wish I was where that person was, and they make that person an enemy, and they mm-hmm. do things, and they manipulate, and they mm-hmm. find ways to get over on people.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you feel about that? How do you feel about
I don't know people like that.
Yeah.
I haven't dealt with that.
I mean,
I know beautiful. It sounds crazy. No, but that's beautiful.
I honestly have not. I've not dealt with that. I don't know if it's just a shield of protection from the Lord above. Yeah, I don't deal with that. No.
Yeah.
But I will be honest. With the, how should I phrase this?
However you want. He's done at me.
With the visibility. And what people believe, I guess, to be fame and popularity that came with Dear White People, did come people at times who I knew were trying to steal my joy a little bit because of that. Mm. Because they didn't have what they assumed that I had. My answer for that, though, is that I just didn't entertain it.
Right.
It wasn't a...
You just didn't engage with these
people.
Engage
with these people. And sometimes it's not even... With some people, it was like... They made it very clear. With other people, it's an energy.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's an energy. Like, there's some people that don't even say anything, but you can feel it. Yeah. You can feel the competition. And it's funny because I always laugh about myself. I'm naturally not a competitive person. It's why I'm extremely athletic, but I'm terrible at sports because I don't care who wins. My dad would be like, Ashley, seriously, you just weren't trying, because I was really good at soccer. He would be so mad after the games. I was just like, Dad, I'm just here for the oranges.
Who wants
like,
to run that much?
Come on, Dad. Like, I'm just happy for the other team. Like, I'll be high-fiving the other team. All my other, like, teammates would be, like, sad and crying. I was like, listen. Like, it's just not my personality. So I've never sat in an audition like, I hope this
girl
don't.
I literally do not know people like that. And, I mean, now have I encountered somebody at, like, an audition that I know on the periphery that's not, like, a friend, and they kind of are looking at me with a side eye?
Yeah.
Sure. I legit don't even think I had a conversation with that person.
Yeah.
Like, do not know people like that.
But that is true. But as your star continues to rise, mm-hmm. people will come out of the woody... The woodiest of the woodwork.
Yes.
and try to, you know, shake some shit up. Can I say shit?
Yeah, you can say anything.
Love
on the
it.
Show.
Oh, I said fuck earlier and then felt bad about it.
Oh, don't.
Oh,
our
fuck,
parents,
fuck, fuck,
I think, listen to the shows.
Oh, that's fine.
Oh,
our
my parents heard. Oh, okay. So. No, listen, my mom doesn't mind, but I would hate, I do not, listen.
Yeah, we're respectful people here, yeah. But still. It's people will good. Come out, though. Like, yes. And that's real. And I know you've experienced that,
of
Justin.
Of course. Like, it's hilarious. Every time there's an announcement.
Oh. Oh.
Thank you for listening to this KCRW podcast. In case you don't know us, KCRW is public radio in Los Angeles, bringing the best of NPR to Southern California. We're also known for our own brand of bold and innovative programming, evocative storytelling, taste-making music, and audio documentaries that are little movies for your ears. You can join our community to support this show and others, or make a one-time donation just to say thank you. Find out more at kcrw.com/join.
Here's the other thing about what you were saying about tribes.
Yeah.
I'm in a bit of an awkward spot because I am a creator. I do create characters, and I have a lot of friends who are mm-hmm. actors. And it's I always feel it when I'm like,
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Seriously.
No, like, I know, but I'm just laughing because I knew that if Ashley would turn this into her podcast.
No. I receive it.
I'm not
it.
Trying to turn this
I
into
love it.
I receive
no,
it.
No.
I receive it. I receive it. I
no,
really
but
do.
No, I honestly, like, for you, how is that for you? Like, what do you feel like this extreme weight of responsibility? Is it frustrating for you? Is it hard for you? Like, how is that being someone who technically can employ your friends?
Mm-hmm.
And not always being able to.
Yeah, it sucks. Okay. I hate the feeling yeah. of, because there's situations where you work with an actor on a role for months and then replace them. Because yeah. that's what the story has evolved
yeah.
and the project has evolved in a place where, like, now you need somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just part of the process. Mm-hmm. And so for me, because I've been on the other side, I absolutely feel it when an idea I had for somebody didn't work out.
Mm.
And I mean, the truth is I'm in a lucky spot because there's everybody in my tribe that's an actor. I legitimately am obsessed with some aspect of them that, because frankly, you're black women, no one else has seen. Like mm-hmm. other shows aren't writing for that and other movies aren't writing for that. And I know when I'm looking at someone who is talented because it's raw, or when someone has craft, or when mm-hmm. someone I can always see that, and
yeah.
and so I kind of obsess over you guys. And when I'm in my process, there's a program that's always running. It's like, oh, is there a spot for that thing that I saw? I'm kind of a bone collector.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I go through life, I collect things that I'm obsessed with that spark me, and then when I sit down to write, I look to see, is there room for those other things?
Yeah.
That maybe have nothing to even do with this thing I'm doing, but they were just exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes those other things are moments that I've seen from my friends who are actors in their lives or in their performance or whatever. So yeah, I'm always thinking about it. And it's not altruistic. I'm thinking about it because I know that I've got people who nobody else, like, nobody can see that this in these people.
You have like an untapped fountain.
Yeah, like
of talent.
You tell me if I'm wrong. I feel like sometimes black women actors, it's like you got like the best players on the bench
mm-hmm.
because there's just not enough opportunities.
Mm, yeah.
And I have a lot of those bench players around me who yeah. I'm like, these people are brilliant.
You have a lot. Yeah.
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 And so, but it's great for me
yeah.
because there's always like a, ooh, I can really put an interesting energy into this role that nobody would have thought of because I know blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I can't always do that. And it sucks. And I also like, I bounce ideas off of you guys too, and things that are in nascent stages, and they become something else that like is now the role goes to somebody. Yeah, I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
But I also know that I have a responsibility to the story. That's first and foremost.
Yeah.
And it's cost me. No, I wouldn't say it's ever cost me friendships, but it certainly caused awkward moments between mm-hmm. me and friends.
Yeah.
Because the story, I love it too much to be nice about it. Mm-hmm. I have to do what's right for the story.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy taking aspects of someone or something that no one else can see and putting it in my shit. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I think that's why, like, people always remark on my casting.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only am I looking for that thing that you have that no one else has, but then once I have you, I want to bring it out of
yeah.
you.
I love that.
I have a question for you for me. What are the things... What are the things, like, do you wonder sometimes what that other side is looking for? Like, do you have any questions about that?
What do you mean other side?
Just like the directors,
yes,
the writers, like,
mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
you know, when you go into an audition, you have such limited information about what they're looking for, how they're looking for it, why did I get this part, why didn't I get that part, etc. Just curious if you have any, we can get real, guys, this is done
yeah.
at me.
Do you want to go or you want me to go first?
Go.
So... It's interesting because acting is subjective.
Yes.
Right? It's just mm-hmm. a subjective. It's such a hard job when you think about it. And the way you stay sane to me as an actor is you have to, like, for me, I'm always trying to get to a level where I trust myself even more.
Mm-hmm.
let's even just skip auditioning and let's just go to when we already have a job.
Okay.
I find a lot of times when I'm on sets that a lot of times actors will be like, you know, whatever, scene, they're doing the scene, cut. Hey, to the director, hey, was that okay? Like, did you think, so I, like, do you need me to do something else, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And I'll even catch myself doing it at times. But what I find is that that's feeding an insecurity. Mm-hmm. If a director, if a good director needs to give you a note,
they'll give you the note. Yeah.
He or she will give you the note. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to put out there that I am lacking or that I'm not confident in whatever I'm doing. I need to do my job as the actor, and I need to let the director do his or her job as the director. So I say all that to say, I try not to feed into, like, what are they looking for?
Yes, me too.
What do they want? Because if I do that, then that means that I don't know what I want.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Then I don't know what I need, and I don't know what I'm trying to do in my process. I can't do your job and mine at the same time.
Right.
Now, if I then, one day, if I'm doing like the Regina King thing or something like that, and I'm in something too, and maybe I'm directing it, then I'll have to figure that out with my brain, with the two sides of my brain. But right now, if I'm the actor, I need to be the actor and mm-hmm. know how to take a note.
But even with auditioning, like, sometimes I'll go into an audition room and I am like the only black girl there. And it's all white girls, maybe one Asian, and they're all like super mm-hmm. thin and like look this certain way. They almost all of them look like that. And I'm like, come in, and I'm completely different. I'm not going to be like, well, how would they do it? Because like,
you can't.
I can't. There's no way. I have to go in and give them my version of whatever they're asking for or whatever it is they put in their breakdown. Mm-hmm. Breakdown. It should be a drinking game every time you hear it. Take a shot. So like, I just have to go in and do my version of it. And also, you might inspire them.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't know.
Well, that's what I'm always looking for.
Yeah, sometimes they don't know exactly what they're looking for. They might have an idea of what they're looking for, but you come in and they're like, oh, I never thought of it that way.
And I'll say this. I think it depends on the director, because some directors want it their way, mm-hmm. and that's the only way they want it. And some directors have a lot of trouble communicating with actors, specifically mm-hmm. because the craft is a mystery to them. And so when they say something like, I want you to be sad here, they know that they're not helping you do that. I think there's an insecurity because they don't know how to speak your language. Uh-huh. And I do think that some of that comes from when you've worked with a director who doesn't know how to speak actor, and you watch the takes and you're like, that wasn't great. And if I could see the scene the way the director could see it, like, I would have done that differently. And so I think some of that comes from actors who have worked with directors who don't know how to talk to them. Mm. And I think what I've found is that all of you are profoundly different in the way that you work. Not one actor that I've worked with works the same way.
Really?
Not a single one. And I have to be flexible because when I'm with you, Ashley, you and I have a one-on-one relationship that is very specific. When I'm with you, you and I have a, Courtney, mm-hmm. you and I have a one-on-one. So like, I never work with actors the same way. I work completely different with Teron, completely different with Tessa. You guys all have your own thing. And I enjoy seeing the world the way you see it and sort of
speaking their language
dialect. You and I are doing this.
Yeah.
And do you believe that you are like a little bit of an empath?
Yes, definitely.
Because that's what it sounds like. You know what I mean?
I think that's where my writing comes from. Mm-hmm. But I think that also comes from being a single gay boy, you know, to a single parent. You have to learn the moods of other people or you won't survive that experience.
And that's something that I think even being a black person in America
is absolutely.
Learning how to what coat am I wearing in this room? What skin am I wearing in this room? And it changes slightly. And I think that's just something you learn early on.
You pick it up. And it's not all positive. There are dark sides to that. But hey, I want to get to some questions from the internet. Tabanette34 from Insta wants to know from Courtney, how did you remain positive when you went through the ebbs and flows of auditions and rejections?
Well, I think I mentioned it earlier. I think yoga really helped me. The yoga philosophy, not a religion. Mm-hmm. You know, because people get weird. Like, oh, it's the devil.
No.
People mm-hmm. get
We're from
weird.
The South. I forget. Okay,
yeah. you know, moving my body, being in my body, taking me out of my mind a little bit. Because mm-hmm. The mind can be so consuming, just having something positive to put your focus on, whether it's writing in a journal, whether it's cooking, whether it's chanting, whether it's, you know, like I said, moving, finding something else to do that you like to do that doesn't have anything necessarily to do with acting.
Yeah.
Yes, please find something else to do.
That's great.
Please.
Okay, this is a really good question. This one's to you, Ashley. This is from Mara's World.
Yes.
_ Dash. And she wants to know, can you tell us a story about your experience with colorism in the entertainment industry?
Yes. It's been clear. It's been made clear to me a few times that I was too dark for a role.
Mm. Which is crazy.
So for me, I found with a few parts that I can't be dark, smart, and like, kind of like maybe funny or whatever, and like be seen in the same way, I hate to say it, as someone who's lighter than me. Mm. Like there's just parts that I know for a fact I didn't get because I was just too dark for it. Mm. It wasn't because I wasn't right for it. It was just they didn't see a dark skinned woman in a role like that. Or a lot of times in like the role of like someone who's like desirable. Mm-hmm. Like that's been hard for me. You know, I think it's funny. A lot of people are like, you need to be like, doing the next like Love Jones, or like we need to see you as like a nice like wife of somebody or whatever, but like I don't like those parts don't really kind of come my way. Like it's not like, and I know that I'm a little young for like the senator's wife or something like that, but my point is that like I'm not typically cast or seen as the girl who is the pretty lawyer who's married to the guy, or who it's not, I have to be the funny girl, or I have to be the best friend. Mm-hmm. I can't be the one who it's about. I have to be the person who a lot of times fuels the story that it's who is about, and that person 9 times out of 10 is lighter than I am.
And is that, and you know, one of the things I love is that we've kind of worked that into the storyline with Sam.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
I think like, you know, I think the thing I love about the show is that it is truly an ensemble, and you can introduce somebody as someone's friend and then go into their shoes and go, oh, they mad or whatever, you know. it's a mind fuck. But also just a question for both of you. What's the slice of pie that you're after? For me, like, I know that I'm not there yet, and I'm at peace with that, but I know what it looks like. Do you have that? Do you have that piece, that this I've made it now thing in your carrot in your head? Or is it not like that for you?
The I've made it now isn't acting job contingent for me in an odd way. It's life contingent. It's like, for me, like, I've made it is like being on a television show that I love and that I can still have a normal life to a degree. And I have my dog and I have my husband and we're starting a family. Like we live in a home, like, and I'm doing my other ventures and things like that. But I don't know what that job, and I'll be honest, I don't have like a dream role. Mm. I think a dream role is hard to say because it's something that I have to feel. Mm. You know, in a lot of ways, Joelle is a dream role for me, but I didn't know that it would be until I did it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I'd love to be Lady Macbeth on Broadway. That would be my dream role. Mm. That to me, if I can get to that place where I am literally like, I am Lady Macbeth on Broadway. Like, oh my God.
The Witch's Play.
Yes. That's it. But I agree with Ashley that I want to be able to have a life, and like, I want to be able to work consistently and love what I do and not have to do bullshit and like just enjoy all the jobs that I have, but also, you know, have a family.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want kids, but maybe.
Okay, so I have a question for you. We're getting into Don't At Me territory, and I encourage you to be real, but we're getting towards the end of the show. So,
Well,
this is just the Don't At Me. This is
such a bad one.
This is the stuff that you get to get off your chest. And I have a question for you. Brits, how do we feel? Black Brits coming over, taking parts, acing it, killing it, slaying it. By the way, amazing actors. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be different. Why do you think that is? Do you think that is? Tell me what you feel.
Don't at me. But it's cool and all, but I do I don't like when they are playing roles.
Slaves.
But I guess that kind
of
goes
part
with
of the
what
black
I'm saying.
Experience,
I don't
the black
like
American
when they're playing
experience.
Roles that are like clearly part of the African American
experience. Right.
Because there's too many African American actors who can play those experiences. Now, if it's just an experience of a person of color, a black person, fine. But like, when it, I don't like that. Don't ask.
But
me.
How? But my. But the meta question is, because on the other side of the fence, I'm always gonna me as a I'm always gonna pick the person that's most exciting to me for something.
Right.
And what do you think the difference? What is the difference? I have an opinion about this, but I want to.
I don't know.
Like,
I honestly don't know.
What is the difference?
Because,
I think
because
that they have a different type of comfort. I mean, listen.
Because if I'm a black actor from Britain mm-hmm. who gets an amazing part, I'm not giving that part up because I technically didn't grow up here.
No, but I don't think it's their responsibility. I think it's the responsibility of those who are casting these projects.
But I'm also always going to cast the best person. Best person is obviously not objective.
Because when that accent pops out, but you playing a dude from the inner city of Chicago, mm-hmm. then I'm like, okay, best person for the role, but that accent is popping out. So I'm irritated now.
That's a hard one. It really is a hard one, honestly. Because it's so gray. It's not like, don't at me, Scarlett Johansson playing a transsexual.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not like that. It's a gray. It's not a black and white. It's not like.
Yeah, I'm not even asking if it's right or wrong. I just personally, how do you feel about it, and why do you?
Well, that's
think
how
that
I feel
is?
About yeah, it. Yeah. It's like I feel gray about it. Like I clearly know that one thing is not like. Sit down, ma'am. Ma'am, sit down. You can't play this role. Like, do I think it could go to a black American? Absolutely. Would I like that? Absolutely. Do I think it's wrong? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
I don't think it's wrong. It's just I would prefer it.
You know what? I feel like the difference is just sitting on the other side of the table and I've auditioned lots of British black actors and American black actors, et cetera. The difference to me is that as an outsider, there isn't any baggage. They're not coming in with having been here playing the bullshit roles for 20 years mm-hmm. or, you know, having mm-hmm. to like be the sassy friend in like a commercial. They're not coming into the audition with any of that because like that's not that experience. And I feel like that, you know, when you talk about what are they looking for? That is the thing I'd never want to see in an audition. When I can feel in your performance that you're trying to be something for me, like I'm out. And I don't think that they do that as often because they don't even know what that thing is. Like,
because they haven't had to their entire
lives. They haven't been chasing that American black target that we all are, that's in our like fucking DNA. But it's that thing, it's like when a black girl can sing well and twerk, it's like, okay, cool, expected. When a white girl comes in and does, it's like, oh my God, because you just don't expect it. And I do think that's true. Has something to do. But also the talent is across the board. There's a lot of talented black folks, period, no matter where they're from. And that's I think it's tough in these streets, but this is why we have Don't Add Me to talk about the tough things.
That was a good question. No one could ask me that.
Yeah.
But like, if you were casting Rosa Parks mm-hmm. for something, you wouldn't mind if Rosa Parks was from Ireland?
No. Okay. Because here's the thing.
What?
Because the most important thing about if I were making a Rosa Parks movie, the most important thing about that movie is that people.
Is Justin making a Rosa Parks movie?
I'm absolutely not. But like, no desire. But no shade to Rosa Parks whatsoever. So down for the movement. I just personally, y'all know this about me. I have no desire to tell a black people in the Jim Crow era South story with no twists or irony. I have no desire to do it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I have no desire to be like the earnest story about so and so. I have no desire. I will go see that movie. I am in support, but I can't make that movie.
That's fair. I can't even see it.
But let's say I was, right? And a black woman from Germany came in or Australia came in and nailed the audition, right?
Yeah.
I'm only thinking about the experience of the audience and whose version of Rosa Parks is going to make you go, oh my God. Not like, that's Rosa Parks. That's exactly what I thought Rosa Parks would be. I'm always looking for someone who brings a surprise to the role. And if that person happens to come from Australia and has dark skin, that person's going to get the role.
Also, I'm never making this movie.
No, you're why never. I picked Rosa Parks. That's so like, random.
I'm like, cool. I'm like, that sounds
Courtney,
fun.
Courtney, you could be Rosa, maybe.
You know, y'all know I'm weird. Yeah, like, if Rosa Parks was, like, secretly, like, time traveling, I'm kind of in now, okay? Now I'm in. But...
Oh, she's back. Oh, my God. Okay, Rosa's back.
Yes.
She's on, like, she's like a spy now. In the front of the bus.
That I would make
tomorrow.
Or no, tomorrow.
She's driving the bus. She's driving the bus now.
Wait,
she's not in the back
okay,
of the bus.
Okay, now it's getting...
Okay.
I'm losing the thread. I love you guys. All right, I want to thank my boos, Ashley Blade, Feather City, Courtney Salz, for sitting down with me today. Our producer, Gina Delvac, and Kara Hart. Our production engineer, Shad O'Brien, Chuck Privateri. Special thanks to Vishnu Vallabhaneni, head of programming, Quid O'Toole. Chris Bowers created our theme song.
Yes.
This is Don't At Me with Justin. If you like the show, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave a review. Show love for us. We'll be back next week with another episode of Don't At Me from the one and only KCRW. Thank you, guys.
Yes. Don't at me, though.
Don't at me.
Hey guys, it's Cheyenne Davis. You may know me from MTV's Teen Mom OG or Think Loud Crew podcast. I'm here with my dad, Papa Floyd, to tell you about our new podcast, Unfiltered Kitchen.
The kitchen is the hub of the household for many of us. The one-stop shop for conversations both big and small. Cheyenne and I have been having open conversations about all aspects of life in our kitchen since well before she was able to see over the counter.
And now we're inviting you into our own kitchen as a part of the family.
Unfiltered Kitchen is a two-way street. I share my advice on cocktails, cooking, parenting, and the lessons I've learned.
And I inform my dad what it's like to raise kids today, how generational barriers affect us, and the joys of being a daughter. Well, your daughter.
Get ready for a whole lot of unfiltered advice. You can take it or leave it, but you're never going to leave this table feeling hungry for more.
Listen to Unfiltered Kitchen wherever you get your podcasts.